While the COVID pandemic has been declared over for some time now, it's left an impact on the education of our children. The education process during the pandemic had to be limited out of concern for the health of the students and the teachers. While options including remote learning were instituted, testing results show that students are still below expected levels of education and knowledge, in some cases way below the expected levels. New Jersey State Senator and Senate Majority Leader Teresa Ruiz has introduced legislation which calls for the creation of, they call it a COVID learning loss czar in New Jersey. Their job would be to oversee a focused effort on helping students catch up in their learning. Our first guest today is with us to respond to this plan. He is the president of the NJEA as well as the mayor of Montclair, New Jersey. Sean Spiller, how are you today, Mr. Spiller?
Doing very well. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Learn more about the NJEA on this and other issues at the address NJEA.org is the obvious website. I want to just briefly go through the points from the legislation, what the role of the learning loss czar would be, and then get your reaction to them. Identifying the educational products, strategies, and services that have demonstrated effectiveness in IDing, reversing student learning loss. Creating and maintaining a resource bank of examples of these products. Identifying public and private entities that could partner with school districts. Providing technical assistance to school districts upon request, supporting grant application processes related to learning loss for school districts, and cooperating with institutions of higher ed in researching and analyzing data on student learning loss. Having encompassed all that, what is the NJEA stand with a learning loss czar for New Jersey?
Well, you know, putting aside a little bit of the concern around the name czar and certainly what we see, you know, worldwide right now and focusing on czars, you know, probably not an area, you know, we would lean. But I would say, you know, one of the bigger challenges, I think, with some of the conversation is really, you know, creating a space to listen to educators, because right now educators are stating some of what we know is obvious, right? When you've got a situation where students have been out of school directly, you know, in terms of trying to work through virtual learning because of COVID, when we see that their learning has not progressed as it would if they were in person with their teacher, it's not a surprise, I think, I would hope. But that said, educators are saying, listen, if you really want to help us make this back up, if you really want to help us, you know, spend time with our kids and help them to learn and grow to where we want them to be, give us that time, right? And I think that's what we are hearing for educators over and over again. And what we certainly don't want to get lost in any state-level created position is, if there are resources to do that, you know, put those resources back down into our schools, put those resources back down into the classrooms, because right there, that's where every single educator who is seeing those students each and every day can tell you right now, you know, who's where, who's ahead, who's a little behind in this subject or that, what style do they best respond to. You know, they know those pieces. I think the bigger challenge they're saying is, even as we come out of COVID, even as everyone is saying we've got to focus on student learning, even as we are very mindful of the mental health challenges and stressors that COVID put on top of an already stressed student population here, we're saying give us the time, reduce some of the onerous paperwork, make sure we've got enough staffing in our schools so that we're not covering 30 different classes instead of doing prep and helping to come up with individualized lessons for students. You know, all the things that we need, give us that time to do it, as opposed to necessarily saying, hey, we've got another state-level position, putting aside whatever name it may be called, to again give us a more top-down, you know, kind of style when each student has got to be, you know, uniquely looked at. That's a little bit of a concern for us, but we say put the resources where they can be used. Put them down in our schools, in our classrooms, and listen to educators who are working with those kids each and every day.
Again, referencing back to those bullet points, the job description I relayed, other than the providing technical assistance to school districts upon request, all the others seem to be, this is what you're going to get. Is a blanket policy the right policy? Because if you look at the testing results, they're ticking up a bit from last year versus 2019, but they're still far below where they need to be. And if you do a breakdown of children from African-American homes and lower-income homes, Hispanic homes as well, that's the greatest member of the student body population that's not graduation ready yet and are falling further behind rather than catching up. does a blanket policy address those specific cases, or does it have to be a school-by-school situation?
No, I do think it's more school by school, and I'll say, you know, as an educator and listening to a lot of my peers in a lot of different districts, oftentimes, you know, disadvantaged communities, they tend to get a more top-down approach. You know, hey, we're seeing concerns around this standardized test score, that standardized test score, so we're all doing something X, Y, or Z. Where in a lot of other communities, you don't see that happen, and then of course we still see the same outcomes, right? And the data then tells us the same things, and then we need more testing to tell us what we know, and then we need more of the top-down approach to keep us in this cycle. I think it's important for us to get out of that and realize that, you know, we in many ways know the issues right here, right? I don't think anyone is sitting there going, I'm surprised that COVID happened. Students had less access to technology. Students that, you know, whose parents were busy in so many other ways. Students in communities that were already disadvantaged. I don't think it should be a surprise that in those districts and in those schools specifically and in those classrooms, those students are having a harder time. But then let's give those educators the ability to say, I know what this or that student needs, but what I need is the time to do it, right? If I'm developing a lesson and I want to make it unique to each of my students, if I've got to do so many other things, paperwork driven, oftentimes from the state, sometimes from my own district, and now even some other state level position saying, here are the approved programs you can choose from, or here are the things that you've got to do. It's just more paperwork pushed upon us that, you know, we need the time to be looking at our students and their student and those needs specifically. So certainly suspect there. You know, anytime someone wants to help you with grant writing and some of those other pieces, certainly a value added. But, you know, specifically that dictating what that student needs, no one can know that better than the person who's with them every single day for hours. But that person right now is being pulled. You pull any educator, they're saying, like, you know, get rid of so much of this other stuff, I'll put in quotes, that we have to do. And give us the time. Give us the time to teach. You know, ask any educators, like, give us the time to teach. That's what we got into this for. We know how to do it. We know how to do it well. You know, we can't keep getting pulled away with all these other pieces.
Dr. Sean Spiller, president of the NJEA, as well as mayor of Montclair, New Jersey, NJEA.org, the website. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Teachers, in a way, are in a no-win situation. If success is achieved, well, they're just doing their job. What do you want, a standing ovation? If things don't work out, they're going to get the brunt of the blame. And certainly, I'm assuming this is happening with the testing results being what they are. What is it that parents need to understand about the situation? Because it's easy to point a finger and say it's your fault. But I've always referenced the education process not being a point A to point B, but there's a triangle, the teacher, the student, and the parents part of that mix as well.
Oh, 100%. I mean, obviously, parents are a huge piece. First educator a child has, right? Their parents. So, you know, I think all of us always have to be working together. I think parents inherently get that. I think everyone saw how hard it is, you know, when students were home and parents were doing a lot of that, teaching alongside the educator, if you will. People got a sense of how difficult it can be, you know, trying to manage a classroom, different learning styles, and focusing on what each kid needs. But I think even coming out of that and you know, understanding where we are and where we'd like to be, which is always improving, right? Always making sure students are at a higher and higher level. I think that always is going to be in partnership. And then this, I'll add a few others, right? In partnership with the state and providing resources, in partnership with districts and saying, hey, let's make sure we are working hard to fill positions, in partnership with our institutions of higher learning that are, you know, recruiting educators to go into the profession and other pieces so that students can have all the different courses that they want to take, that they can have classes that are covered instead of being, you know, sitting in a cafeteria with no teacher, that they have the prep times to plan individualized lessons. And yes, that they're getting those resources to say, hey, what are some tools that I can help, Sean catch up on whatever it is that he's learning as a student, right? Or to get ahead if I'm wherever I might be at. So I think it's always in partnership. I think you're certainly right that, hey, if everything's just going smoothly, you know, people are focusing on something else maybe, and our schools are number one in the nation. People have, had a chance here in New Jersey to look the other way and focus on other things. But we've got to make sure we are continuing to focus on education or we won't keep that spot. And right now that really comes down to like many other states as well, but an educator shortage, right? We just don't have enough people. They're not staying in the profession, which is a really big challenge. And it does take a team, you know, all the educators, all the education support professionals in that district, you know, helping to make sure that student can succeed, give us the resources, and quite frankly, take some of the other, you know, barriers out of the way and let us do our jobs. And that's the recipe for success.
Just a closing point on my part, and I think something that needs to be addressed more than at least what I've seen, is if this situation doesn't get corrected in an effective, meaningful way, then challenges in education leads to frustration. Frustration leads to quitting. And could that foretell an increase in the dropout rate as we move forward if something effective isn't done regarding the learning loss from the COVID pandemic? That's something to be determined, to be hopefully considered significantly. But as Mr. Spiller said, it's really a matter of cooperation and communication to bring about the answers that we need with the education of our children. You can find out more about the NJEA at njea.org. He is the president, as well as Mayor of Montclair, New Jersey. Sean Spiller, thanks so much for being here today.
No, thank you. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate the conversation. Thank you.